Chapel Program, Wednesday, November the 25th, Student Coordinating Council.
Beginning on Monday, November 30th, a week of prayer for foreign missions will be sponsored by the Campus WMS. Participants will meet each night at 8 o'clock p.m. in the Little Chapel. A nursery for the children will be provided.
Our program this morning consists of a thanksgiving for various heroes of the faith who have gone before us. The members of the program panel will present these to you.
In this time of thanksgiving for our Christian heritage, let us revere St. Paul. This champion of the faith, upon encounter with the living God in Christ Jesus, forsook the religion of his ancestors, forsook all, in service to that Lord who met him on the road to Damascus. Hear his words of what he endured for the sake of the gospel. 5 times I have received at the hands of the Jews 40 lashes, less 1. 3 times I have been beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I have been shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day I have been adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from the Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brethren, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there's the daily pressure upon me of my anxiety for all the churches. Among the New Testament witnesses, Paul stands as chief apostle to the Gentiles. Mainly through his tireless devotion, the gospel was made known to the first century Roman world, from Jerusalem to Rome, and Christianity began to experience the fulfillment of the Great Commission. To Paul, we are indebted for a goodly portion of the New Testament literature, rich in information, bountiful in the joy that comes in service, euphoric in desire to share a new love. We give thanks that Paul formulated and recorded a foundation for Christian theology, justification by faith, not least among his tenets. We have benefited from Pauline material in our understanding of early Christianity, its problems, its structure, its urgency. We give thanks to God for his servant, St. Paul.
In the second and third centuries of the growing Christian community was looked upon with increasing hostility by the Roman government. By the common people and the erudite, Christians were accused of atheism, treason, and gross immorality. They were often persecuted, not because they had committed a specific crime, but merely because they were Christians. But false charges and persecution do not go unchallenged. Various men, whom we call the early apologists, were aroused to a literary defense of Christianity. One of the most well-known of these men is Justin the Martyr. In his apology, he provided a dignified and effective defense of the faith which he had adopted. Men like Justin did not attempt to make Christianity popular or the way of Christ easy. In an age of syncretism, they did not attempt to gloss over the contrast between Christianity and pagan religions or philosophies, nor did they suggest working agreements or compromises between Christianity and its rivals and accusers. They explained and thus proclaimed the Christ in terms and thought patterns relevant to their age. and so they helped to preserve the gospel in a trying time. For their faith and their courage, let us thank God.
In thanksgiving, let us revere St. Augustine, in whom was the highest religious attainment since apostolic times, his soul's troubled searching until finding rest in God has been inspiration to countless Christians. Augustine of Hippo was a polemical writer, fearless in his confrontation with the paganism of his day. His monastic example has called many to contemplation and self-sacrificing service. St. Augustine did more to shape Western Christianity than any other single person. He is regarded as father of the doctrine of the sacraments in the Western Church. He is regarded as father of much that characterized medieval Roman Catholicism. Chief among his contributions in this area was his idea of a theocratic state set forth in his City of God. Indeed, Augustine was the spiritual ancestor of the Reformation. We give thanks for Augustine's dynamic but often neglected definition of religion as a vital relationship to the living God. We give thanks for Augustine's confessions and their devotional inspiration. We give thanks to God for his servant, St. Augustine.
Bernard, founder of the Christian monastery of Clairvaux, was the foremost preacher of his day. In the words of one church historian, he was the greatest religious force of his age, and by common consent deemed one of the chief of medieval saints. We can catch something of his spirit today in one of his hymns, a visible and audible contribution of our heritage.
Even before he was a mature man, he felt strongly a deep sense of sin. Profoundly moved by the death of a friend and narrow escape from lightning, he became a monk. In 1512, he became a doctor of theology at the University of Wittenberg. Even now, though, in spite of monastic strenuousness, he could not find peace. Gradually, he became convinced that salvation is not based on works of merit of achievement, but on complete trust in God's promises, that God forgives freely, that the new relationship to God in Christ issues in joyful conformity to his divine will. Roused to burning indignation by ecclesiastical abuse and corruption, in 1517, Martin Luther nailed 95's thesis on the door of a castle church. He could not then know that the history of the world would be profoundly altered by his work. He desired to reform a perverted Christianity. In doing so, he made inestimable contributions to our heritage. For his courage, his intellectual gifts, his power to move men, and for his deep and abiding faith, let us thank God.
I am grateful for Roger Williams and for his clear and uncompromising advocacy of full religious freedom for the individual, unrestricted in any way by civil authority. A graduate of Cambridge University and an ordained priest in the Church of England, Roger Williams, like many of his contemporaries, came to the New England colonies in search of a newer and freer religious environment in which he could live the fullest and most creative expressions of his faith. It was to his credit, however, that unlike most of his contemporaries, he realized that the Puritan theocracy in New England was just as inimical to the spirit of Christ as the situation in the Old England which he left behind. Banished by the Puritans, he founded the colony of Rhode Island, the first state in history with an explicit and complete guarantee of freedom to believe and practice any religion or none at all. Thus, centuries after the Reformation, the noblest, the most enduring, and most continually necessary principle of Protestant Christianity had finally received its concrete expression. For preserving the freedom of the Christian faith in a time of great international change, and for helping to stitch full religious liberty into the fabric of our political and spiritual heritage, I am grateful for Roger Williams.
I am grateful for John Wesley and for his deep insight into the personal and social nature of the Christian faith, an insight which has immeasurably enriched our heritage. Hoping to buttress his own faith, he went from England as a Church of England missionary to Georgia, only to return saying, "I went to America to convert the Indians, but oh, who shall convert me?" One night in London, however, a meeting devoted to a discussion of the Epistle to the Romans, he gained that classic understanding that, as he put it, "I felt I did trust Christ, Christ alone for my salvation, and an assurance was given me that he had taken away my sins, even mine, and saved me from the law of sin and death." From this intensely personal experience, he launched that great evangelical revival of the 18th century England, which was to have so much impact not only on English public and private life, but on the American heritage as well. For his preservation of the unmistakably evangelistic and personal nature of the Christian faith, and for his demonstration that personal religion brings social changes as well, two principles which live on in our religious tradition, I am grateful for John Wesley.
I thank God for the generations of the circuit riding preachers who tirelessly proclaimed the gospel to the frontiers, the farms, and the villages of America, from times of early settlement down into the recent memory of many persons gathered here this morning. These men, most of whom will remain forever unnamed to this world, were often of little formal education, but just as often were possessed of deep personal insights into the truth of the Christian message and how it could redeem and ennoble the lives of all men. With a singular devotion, they carried their ministry to people and churches both near and far, giving a geographical scope to their individual ministries, which has, especially considering their means of transportation, been truly outstanding. For keeping the proclamation of the gospel alive, let us be thankful for the circuit-riding preacher, without whose witness many, if not most of us, would not be here in this place this morning.
Born in 1906, Dietrich Bonhoeffer seemed to have theology in his blood. Having studied at Tübingen and Berlin, by the time he was 25, he had before him the prospects of a splendid career in theological scholarship. But these were not ordinary times, and Bonhoeffer was a realist. He was one of the few who quickly understood, even before Hitler came to power, that National Socialism was a brutal attempt to make history without God and to found it on the strength of man alone. When Hitler came to power, Bonhoeffer abandoned his academic career. When war seemed inevitable, friends got him out of Germany and to America. But he felt that he must return to his own country. In a letter to Reinhold Niebuhr, he wrote, "I shall have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war if I do not share in the trials of this time with my people. Christians in Germany will face the terrible alternative of either willing the defeat of their nation in order that Christian civilization may survive, or willing the victory of their nation and thereby destroying our civilization. I know which of these alternatives I must choose." Later in prison, he wrote, "I am sure of God's hand and guidance, and thankful and glad to go the way which I am being led." In prison and concentration camps, Bonhoeffer greatly inspired all who came in contact with him by his courage, his unselfishness, and his goodness. His main concern was to minister to the sick and to his fellow prisoners. During the bombings of Berlin, while other prisoners were beating the walls with their fists, Bonhoeffer stood like a giant, calm and full of faith. He was executed by special order of Himmler on April 9, 1945, just a few days before his concentration camp was liberated by the Allies. For the mighty witness of this man and thousands of others like him throughout Christian history, let us give thanks to God.
This morning, especially, let us give thanks to God for Dr. Paul Carlson and Mrs. Phyllis Ryan, missionaries to the Congo, martyred yesterday only moments before the arrival of forces which liberated most of their fellow hostages. Dr. Carlson responded to the missionary challenge relatively late in his life, as he became aware of the overwhelming medical need in the Congo and of their spiritual implications for him as well as for the Congolese. He responded to this challenge and soon became one missionary among over 100,000 Congolese. And in the area where he worked, He became a spiritual insight which worked almost miracles on the people around about him. Aware of the impending possibility of his death, he wrote home that he faced it gladly, secure in the knowledge and strength of Christ. For both Dr. Carlson and Mrs. Ryan, and all other missionaries who endured hardship, suffering, and death to proclaim the gospel throughout the world, and for all those in all times and places who have persevered and extended the Christian faith from the time of Jesus to today, let us give thanks to God.
Hebrews 11:32. Time is too short for me to tell the stories of Gideon, Barak, Samson and Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets. Through faith, they overthrew kingdoms, established justice, saw God's promises fulfilled. They muzzled ravening lions, quenched the fury of fire, escaped death by the sword. Their weakness was turned to strength. They grew powerful in war. They put foreign armies to rout. Women received back their dead, raised to life. Others were tortured to death, disdaining release to win a better resurrection. Others again had to face jeers and flogging, even prisons and fetter bars. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were put to the sword. They went about dressed in skins of sheep or goats, in poverty, distress, and misery. They were too good for this world. They were refugees in deserts and on the hills, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. These also, one and all, are commemorated for their faith. And yet they did not enter upon the promised inheritance, because with us in mind, God made a better plan, that only in company with us should they reach their perfection. And what of ourselves? With all these witnesses to faith around us like a cloud, we must throw off every encumbrance, every sin to which we cling, and run with resolution the race for which we are entered, our eyes fixed on Jesus, on whom faith depends from start to finish. Jesus, who, for the sake of the joy that lay ahead of him, endured the cross, making light of its disgrace, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. As we sing our closing hymn in a spirit of prayer, let us ask ourselves if our dedication and thanksgiving can somehow match the thanksgiving of these men who gave their whole lives in thanks to God.